came to pass in the month of Nisan or Nisan, however you say that. I used to drive one of them. Came to pass in the month of Nisan or Nisan in the 20th year of Artaxerxes, the king, that wine was before him, and I took up the wine and gave it unto the king. Now I had not been before time sad in his presence. I think what he means to say there is that he had not been sad to where the king would know it. The king in verse 2 says, "Wherefore said the king unto me, why is thy countenance sad, seeing thou art not sick? This is nothing else but sorrow of heart. And then I was very sore afraid." I believe that anybody that says they were never sad is probably lying. And I know good and well Nehemiah wasn't much different than me and you. And there was no doubt times that he experienced sadness. He was living away from his homeland. No doubt many times he was sad, but never where the king knew about it. He always put on the front, Brother Sexton. He always kept up the smile. He always did his best to walk in with a pleasant attitude and a nice look about him. He combed his hair. He ironed his shirt. He kept himself looking neat. Didn't let the king know that he was sad. And that's the way he had been all these times before, but this time was something he just couldn't handle anymore. This time was the burden that he was having trouble bearing. This time he was in a dark place, and he wasn't able to put on a smile anymore. He wasn't able to come in laughing and being happy-go-lucky and doing the job with a front on anymore. And he had to come in, and knowing good and well the king was going to see it, he had to come in with a sad countenance. And he had to come in with his heart very heavy, the sorrow of heart. And the king said unto him, or he said unto the king, "Let the king live forever. And why should not my countenance be sad when the city, the place of my father's sepulchres, lieth waste, and the gates thereof are consumed with fire?" Many people do try to go home different times, and it's never the same. But in your mind, you always want it to be the same. You always want everything to look the same. You always want everything to appear to be the same. And in Nehemiah's heart, the sorrow that was gripping him was he was thinking about his home place, thinking about the place of his father's sepulchres, and it was lying in waste, and the gates thereof consumed with fire, and it was breaking his heart. He couldn't handle it anymore. And he was before the king with a sad countenance and with a tear in his eye, doing the best he could to put up a front. You've done the same thing. Doing the best you could to walk through that door and not let anybody know about it. And to smile and not let anybody see anything different on your face. And to try your best to bear up under that load that you was under. But there's times when you just can't do it. And Nehemiah is facing one of them times now. So he tells the king what's going on and why he's sorrowful. And the king said unto me, "For what dost thou make request?" So I prayed to the God of heaven, and I said to the king, "If it please the king, and if thy servant have found favor in thy sight, that thou wouldest send me unto Judah, unto the city of my father's sepulchres, that I may build it." And the king said unto me, for the queen also sitting by him, "For how long shall thy journey be, and when wilt thou return?" So it pleased the king to send me, and I set him a time. And Nehemiah was on his way. And everything's going good. He heads back to the house. He heads back to the home place. He's ready to turn things around. He's ready to have revival. He's ready to get things stirred up. But when he gets back, there starts to be some trouble. Verse 6 starts off in verse 4 down to verse 6. Says, "So we built the wall, and all the wall was joined together unto the half thereof, for the people had a mind to work. Man, what stuff you can get accomplished when you've got a mind to work. Brother Stetzer took the kids up from the senior gym class that includes all the high school and maybe 7th and 8th grade, I believe it is. Took them up to the property yesterday, to the new property to clear out some rocks so they could come in with some seed and get some of the ground ready. And, boy, they were all grumbling about that. You know, they were going to have to take a PE class and go up there and clear out rocks. And I said, who knows? I said, maybe, is he close to Easter time? I said, maybe there's a special Easter rock up there. And you find that one special rock, and you might get a prize. And they told Brother Stetzer that. So after they worked for a while and started, he could tell they were starting to, you know, get a little bit of dragging in their spirit, and they were starting to get a little bit tired of what they were doing. He hollered out, and he said, whoever finds the prettiest rock out here, I'll give you a dollar bill. And that just enthused them a little bit more and put them back into a mind to work. You know, it's amazing what a little green will do for kids. And boy, he said it was amazing the rocks that they cleaned up. And it was amazing the things that they, you know, got out. And they come back to the classroom, and they were telling me, I think my rock was prettier. This, he gave the dollar to so-and-so, but I think my rock was prettier. And they were going on, you know, but they went up there and had a mind to work. And man, it's amazing the things you can get done when you got a mind to work. When God begins to build a body and begins to get some cohesion in a congregation, when God begins to move on everyone that's in a certain location and begins to give everybody the same burden, everybody the same mind, everybody the same desire, man, you can get out and revival is easy to get going, and the move of God is easy to get going. When from the front of the church to the back, everybody's praying for it, and everybody's looking for it, and everybody's fasting for it. And everybody's is pleading with the Lord to send a revival. It's amazing what God will do in a situation like that. And here, they pretty much started off with one. Nehemiah went back and got everybody stirred up and got everybody all happy. And they started building the wall. They got halfway up thereabouts. It talks about under the half thereof, for the people had a mind to work. And the revival was on. But then it came to pass that when Sanballat and Tobiah and the Arabians and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites heard that the walls of Jerusalem were made up and that the breaches began to be stopped, that they were very wroth and conspired all them together to come into fight against Jerusalem and to hinder it. Nehemiah seen the situation that he was in, seen the way the homeland was, seen the way Judah was, seen the way the city was in, and knowing that something needed to be done, stirred up the people. He got under that burden, and revival began to spread, and people began to get excited. And then just like it always happens in revival, you can guarantee it, you can take it to the bank. Once God starts to move, Satan will start to move shortly thereafter. Every single time. You get a desire to go to church, and you get a desire to do more for God than you've ever done. And that's when the mandatory overtime will start. That's when they'll come around and say, we've never had to work a Sunday, but boy, we're going to have to now. Is that okay? That's when it'll come around that little Sally or little Johnny will stub his toe or get stitches on the way out the door to the service. You name it, and it's going to happen. When you get a mind to do something for God, when you get a desire to get in and dig in and see what God can do, that's just automatically sending signals to Satan and every demon in hell to do what they can to stop you. And that's exactly what happened here. The revival started. Everybody was excited about it. The wall was halfway built. The breaches were beginning to be stopped. And before you know it, here comes Sanballat. Here comes Tobiah. Here comes all the Ammonites and all them people. And they come back in. They're going to do everything they can do to make sure that this gets stopped and to hinder this work. You might as well just face it. It's going to happen. God, there's not going to be a revival anywhere where Satan just stands back and lets it go without the hand of God somehow intervening and holding him back. He's going to do exactly what he's supposed to do. You could expect him to fight tooth and nail every step of the way. But that's exactly what happens in revivals, and that's exactly what happened here. That's why the young convert comes in and gets saved, and for the first 2 or 3 weeks he's doing good. And then everybody else that's been saved for a while starts to hold their breath and starts to wonder when they come in a little bit late one night, and then the next week a little bit later, and because they know that all that happened to him is Satan's come back harder than he ever had before. Satan begins to buffet them. Satan begins to come against them, and that's when we step up our prayer and step up our pats on the back and let them know they're doing good. Why? Because we know they're starting to fight a battle they've never fought before, because Satan reacts that way every time revival comes around. And he's doing the same thing here to Nehemiah. He's doing the same. We, you and me ought to be looking around like Nehemiah with a sad countenance on our face at the state of our churches in this country. We ought to be looking around with just as many tears in our eyes and just as many sorrowful looks on our face, because we've got the same situation now. In the churches all across this country, those that confess to be Christians, those that confess to be well-educated theologians, will come up with some of the most off-the-wall stuff, and will come up with some of the most ridiculous and outrageous stuff out of this Bible, and just begin to pull people every which way. We need to be that same kind of sad countenance that Nehemiah had, and we need to get under that same kind of burden that he had, because we've got some breaches that need to be stopped. We've got some walls that need to be built back up in our country just as well. So revival needs to be going on here just like it was in Nehemiah's day. And we need to be ready for the fight that comes along after it. We need to be ready for the onslaught that comes along after it. When Satan comes up against the Word of God, we need to come right back at him with some offensive moves, Brother Collins. I mean, there's times, many times we sit back and say, I hope he never comes in that door. We need to step on outside that door and take him on head to head, because I think the greater is he that is in us than he that is in the world. If you want God to be on your side, then let the Lord know that you're on his side. If you want God to fight for you, then let God know you're fighting for him. Let him know that you're willing to take some ground back, and you're willing to go against Satan wherever you may find him. And you're willing to do some fighting yourself. You're willing to go on the offensive. You're willing to do something for the Lord. And here comes the trouble. And they conspired all of them together to fight against Jerusalem and to hinder it. Nevertheless, we made our prayer unto God and set a watch against them day and night because of them. Judah said, the strength of the bearers of burdens is decayed, and there is much rubbish, so that we're not able to build the wall. Brother Collins is a wonderful pastor, known across the country. He's come to Hamilton and did what God wanted him to do, put Hamilton on the map for God. But Brother Collins will be the first one to tell you, when he looks around and sees the rubbish that needs to be cleaned up in Hamilton, he can't do it alone. He'll be the first one to tell you when the load begins to get heavy, when things begin to get hard to pick up, he starts looking around for someone else, Brother Burns, that can help him lift the load. That's you and that's me. And here in this situation, no doubt Nehemiah still had his shoulder to the wheel. He still was pushing and was trying and was lifting and was working with everything that he had in him. No doubt he hadn't stopped. He hadn't let up 1 ounce. He hadn't turned around one inch. But those around him, those burden bearers, began to get depressed. And those burden bearers began to get discouraged. And it seemed like they would clear out this little bit of rubbish and look around, and there was a pile twice as big over here. And they would clear over there and clear that pile out and work all day on that one and turn around. And it seemed like this pile had got all that much bigger. And they began to look around and see all that rubbish. They began to look around and see everything that needed to be done. And they started looking at Nehemiah. I say, we just can't do it anymore. Come on. The burden bearers are starting to get weary. The ones that are holding up the work of God, the ones that are trying to help Nehemiah go on, they're starting to get weary, and they're starting to get low, and they're starting to get upset. And Nehemiah needs every one of them. Nehemiah needs every one of them. There's not one that he wants to see turn around and go back to their house with their hands thrown up in defeat. There's not one that he wants to see turn around and say, we just can't make it. I don't think Nehemiah ever said, we don't need that one over there, let him go. If he's discouraged and down and out, just forget about him. We don't need him anymore. Paul made that same mistake. Don't worry about John Mark. He ain't nothing to us. Let him go on back to the house, the big crybaby. But there come a time when Paul turned around and said, you go get John Mark. I need every burden bearer I can get. I need everybody with me that I can get to help me lift this load. I even need John Mark.
I'm even willing to swallow some of my own words and go back and get that fella that I turned my back on. Get that fella that I talked about as such a wimp and as such a baby. Would you please go back and get him? Not one. We can't afford to lose one burden bearer. We can't afford to lose one worker on this wall. We can't afford to lose one Christian. We can't afford to lose one saint of God. Brother Collins is looking for everyone he can get to help him. And we can't lose one of them. I don't think Nehemiah was wanting to lose any of them. I don't think Nehemiah was wanting to lose one of them. You know, there's sometimes help comes our way. If we're not careful, we'll have this I can do it myself attitude. We'll have this I can do it better attitude. When it comes to singing and knowing which song to sing, and I mean, Brother Collins can get up and he ain't paying me for nothing. This ain't to build up Brother Collins. I think Brother Collins can sing a song to move a service. It don't have to be fast. It don't have to. I mean, he can just pick the right song. But you know what he does? He'll let you and me get up and try it every now and then. And he'll let you and me get up and sing some songs that maybe don't always fit. Maybe that wasn't the one that ought to be sung. And maybe Brother Collins could have done a better job at it right there. But he's letting us step out. He's letting you and me step out and do something too. He's letting you and me lift up a little bit of that burden. Sometimes we think, I know how to do it best, and I'm going to be the one doing it. Yeah. And stay out of my way. Yeah. I was in a car, Mercury Marquis, I believe it was. Me and my wife out somewhere. This has been years ago. It was hot and overheating, and I went out, you know, to try to get the radiator cap off, get some water in it. And I don't know which car it was. We had such wonderful cars over the years. So, I mean, it could have been any number of them. But I remember going out, and, you know, it's hot, and I knew it was hot. And I was trying to work it off, you know, just to let it pop with the rag over it and let the water spray where it wanted to. And I got it off, but that cap went down inside the engine. And I looked around her, and I didn't think I'd be able to get it. There was an elderly couple in the parking lot over here. She was sitting in the car, and I was under the car. I thought I'd seen it, thought I might be able to reach it. I got down there, and here he come walking over, and he said, what's going on? I told him the story, and I said, the cap's down here, and I'm not sure I can get it. And he said, oh, hang on, I got a tool. And I thought to myself, well, as he was talking, I thought, well, you know, if he can help me. But just about that time, Sister Sexton, I got my hand right on that cap. And I told him, I said, no, I said, I think I can, but it was too late. He was halfway back to his car. And me with my hand right on that cap, not knowing what in the world that fellow was going for. I let it go, left it right where it was at, Brother Hurst. Climbed back up and act like I didn't know where it was at or what I could do. He come back over with some long gizmo, had some claw thing on the end of it, tickled to death to help me out. I mean, you could tell he probably just had it at Sears and Roebuck, you know, stuffed it in his car, was just waiting for a chance to use that thing. And here he come over there, boy, he had a big smile on his face. Here, let's try this. And he got that thing down in there. I knew good and well I could lay on the floor, on the ground, and have it in a matter of seconds. But I let him work, and we worked that thing around. He got that thing hooked on there, and he pulled that thing out. Boy, the biggest smile on his face. He was glad to be helping me. I told him how thankful I was for that thing. I said, where'd you get that thing at? I built that thing up like it was the best thing since sliced bread. I said, I've never seen nothing like that in my life. Man, I'm so glad you was here. I don't know what I would have done with that. I was doing my best to make him feel good. And he walked back to that car, just the biggest smile on his face. That's probably the conversation they had all the way home. Why'd you do that for, Mark? Because I don't know what would have happened, and I'm not going to refuse any help that comes my way. And it doesn't matter to me if I think I might be able to do it better, if I think I might be able to do it quicker. Man, if it's somebody's wanting to help lift the load, I'm going to let them help lift the load. If somebody's wanting to come along and give me a hand, I'm going to do everything I can to help them and let them get in the work too. Let them get the blessing as well. We need every burden bearer we can find. We need every saint. We need every Christian. We need every worker we can get a hold of. You might be able to do it better, but they need to get into work as well. That's what Nehemiah was saying. I can't lose one of them. I can't lose one of them. We moved that piano at our house so many times. There was a church, a Baptist church. I don't know. I may have told you. I'm not sure where it was at. Maybe up north of here. And the fellow that was pastoring it, we know some of their relatives. And they closed the church down, a little Baptist church, and they gave us the organ out of that church. They said, you want it, it's yours. And they brought that over to the house, and I was helping him, and he looked at that big old baby grand piano that we got in the house there. I mean, the finish is pretty old and you know, nicked up, and it's an old piano, but man, the thing was just as hard to move. He looked at me and said, "How'd you get that thing in here?" And the piano we had before that was a piano and an organ together, and that thing weighed a ton. And I can remember taking it up steps in different places, and been through so many family members when it comes to moving a piano, I'm almost afraid to call them anymore. He said, "How'd you get that thing in here?" I said, I had a big party and fed everybody and told them, before you leave, we need to move this piano from over to here. I said, when it comes to moving some things, when it comes to getting under a burden and lifting something, you need all the help you can get. And the way the world is out there, any church anywhere needs all the help it can get. If they're going to raise this standard and raise it very high, they've got to have some burden bearers. They've got to have some people that's willing to get under the load and do a work for God. Now, Nehemiah wasn't willing to lose one of them. He didn't want to lose one of them. So he begins to tell them. It came to pass, down in down in 13, "Therefore I set in the lower places behind the wall, and on the higher places I even set the people after their families with their swords, their spears, and their bows. And I looked and rose up and said unto the nobles, and to the rulers, and to the rest of the people, be not afraid of them. Remember the Lord, which is great and terrible, and fight for your brethren, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your houses." General MacArthur couldn't have done it any better. "And it came to pass, when our enemies heard that it was known unto us, and God had brought their counsel to naught, that we returned all of us to the wall, and every one to his work. And it came to pass from that time forth that the half of my servants wrought in the work, and the other half of them held both the spear, the shields, and the bows, and the habergeons, and the rulers were all behind all the house of Judah." Verse 17, "They which builded on the wall, and they that bear burdens," they're back in again, they're excited again, "with those that laded, every one of them with his hand wrought in the work, and with the other hand held a weapon. For the builders, every one had his sword girded by his side, and so builded. And he that sounded the trumpet was by me." What happened from then on? Those burden bearers that were all discouraged at the beginning, when they seen Nehemiah rallying them to the cause, when they seen that everybody wasn't willing to give up, they said, "I'm not willing to give up either. No matter how much rubbish may be out there, no matter how much it seems like the walls aren't never getting any higher, no matter how much we work, and no matter how much it seems like there's left to do, man, Nehemiah, if you're going to try it, I'm going to try it with you. If you're going to jump in, I'm going to jump in with you." And those that bear the burdens got back into the fight, got back to an altar, prayed back through to God, and said, "I want to work some more. Give me a burden to get under. Give me a load to lift. Give me something to help." They got right back in the fight. They got right back in. They got right back to the job that they were doing beforehand. Nobody went back to their house. Everybody jumped in and did the work of God. And before you know it, you know the rest of the story. Before you know it, those walls were up. But it's good to remember in verse 16. That from the time that they went back to work, they were from then on ever vigilant and ever kept a watch so that that same thing wouldn't happen again. So that that same depression, so that that same discouragement wouldn't happen again. We've got young people in this church. I'm the youth leader at the Highway of Holiness. In case you came in late, I'll just let you know. We've got young people in this church that God's dealing with and getting a hold of their life and changing and making them into something that God can use. We've got young people in this church that are beginning to get some spiritual desires that they've never seemed to have. They're growing, you know, some of those that grow older and all of a sudden they begin to see things different. That my girls are the same way. They begin to ask the questions, and they're all the young people, no matter what time of life we're in, we can always find those young people that are coming into that area where they begin to look at spiritual things in a serious sense. And we've got a church full of young people doing that right now. Let me tell you, as your youth leader, parents, moms, and dads, what I don't want to see you do is to drop your kids off back there at the door and say, I'm not going to worry about it now. Brother Barker will keep him saved. Brother Collins will keep him saved. The church will keep him saved. That's not how it's going to work. We need you. We need every parent. We need every mom and dad getting under the load. Just because there's a pastor here doesn't mean the congregation doesn't need to do nothing. Just because there's a youth pastor here don't mean I couldn't use your help, because I sure could. I want every burden bearer we can find to get under every ministry we've got here at the church. When the prison ministry goes out to the prison, don't you think they wish they had about 5 or 10 more from the highway out there with them to get under the load and to help lift them up? When Children's Church starts on Sunday morning, don't you think those that deal with those kids wish they had 2 or 3 or 4 or 10 more down there to help them? There's nobody here that wants to do it alone. There's nobody here that wants to tackle the job all by themselves. But we need everybody we can to jump in and lift up the burdens, to jump in and lift up the load, to jump in, roll their sleeves up, so to speak, and jump in and get it done. Oh, Brother Mark, I'm tired. Everybody gets tired. Oh, Brother Mark, I'm wore out. Everybody gets wore out. But man, when you see the job that needs to be done, that's the time just to say, forget about how tired I am. Forget about how wore out I am. Let's just get in and do something for God. Let's just get in and get the work done. We'll come home. Sometimes it'll be late and I'll be tired and everybody in the family wore out. But because of the day it was, and because we had to rush out or something, you know, the dishes or different things in the house might need done. And I'll try my best to get my wife to go to bed. And I'll try my best to get her to just to stop and rest, you know, and to take a break. And she'll look at me and she'll, oh, I just can't sleep with knowing the house is this way. I just can't do it. And no matter how tired she is, Brother Hurst, with me sawing logs in the bed, I'll get up the next morning and she'll say, I didn't go to bed till 12 or 1 o'clock, but I felt so good getting the job done. I felt so good getting it finished. And even though we're tired, even though we're wore out, even though it seems like we've been doing this for so many years, oh, how good it's going to feel when the job is done. Oh, how good it's going to feel when God looks down and says, I know who you are. You're one of them burden bearers. You're one of them that was under the load and helping out in the work of God. You're one of them that was doing everything you could. Man, we'll get a smile on our face like that fella did walking back to the car with his claw gadget. And we'll say, man, I'm glad we stayed in. I'm glad we stuck to it. Even though we was tired. Even though we was wore out. Man, I'm glad we stuck to it. Look what God is offering us now. Look at the reward He's given us. Because we didn't leave the burden. Because we didn't leave the work. Because we stayed under the load and helped somebody out. Oh, it's going to be great. It's going to be great when we see our reward. All God wants us to do is stay with the burden. Stay with the work of God. Stay under the load. Keep lifting. Keep pushing. Keep pulling. Keep priming. Keep singing. Keep preaching. Do whatever you need to do. But don't stop now, Brother Paul. Now is the time to put more effort in than we ever have before. Because the walls are falling down all around us. And somebody needs to be building them up. And that somebody's you and me. That somebody's the church of God. Don't stand there and say, if I don't do it, somebody else will. I'm not so sure about that. God needs you right where you're at. And God wants you there. God wants you working. He wants you to be a burden bearer. Yes, sir. The bearers of burdens began to get discouraged. And Nehemiah said, I can't lose a one of them. I need everyone I got. I need everybody out there. God's the same way tonight. There ain't nobody in this house unimportant to God. There ain't no job in this house that you're doing that God don't recognize and God don't see. And God don't put down on His ledger. Every time your knees fall to the floor in prayer. Every time you push that plate away with a fasting heart. There's everything that you do for God. He sees each and everything. And He's keeping a record for you and me. One of these days we're going to be glad we stuck to the job. One of these days we're going to be glad we didn't turn around and walk out. One of these days we're going to be glad we didn't run when the rain started coming and the hay needed to get in the barn. We're going to be glad one of these days that we stuck it out. And God's got the reward for us. Can you say amen? Everybody find a place to pray.